The Radio Today program with Broadcast Bionics. Innovative solutions for creative radio people.
Hello, I'm Trevor Dan. On this week's episode of the weekly podcast from Radio Today, one of the great names in British talk radio, James Whale, tells us about his podcast, his approach to breakfast radio at BBC Essex, and what he thinks of the current state of speech broadcasting. We've got news too from Stuart Clarkson and Radio Moments with David Lloyd. But we'll start in Chelmsford, where James Whale, ex-Talk Radio, Talk Sport, LBC, Radio Air and many more, has settled into the breakfast slot on BBC Essex. He's also launched his own podcast called The New James Whale Radio Show.
Broadcast Bionics. Innovative solutions for creative radio people.
So, James, don't you have enough radio to do with a breakfast show on BBC Essex and a weekend show at Kent? Why do you want to do your own radio show online?
Well, Trevor, it's like this. Can you ever be on the air enough? I'm not sure that you can. And I started doing it a couple of years ago when I thought that most radio would be online by now. And of course it isn't. I also started doing it when I thought I'd rather do my own thing than be at the beck and call of people who can dismiss you at any moment. But it doesn't seem to have taken off, monetarily speaking, as well as it will in the future. I have absolutely no doubts that it will in the future. It'll be quite interesting to see what happens when people, I think, realise that their mobile phones are radio receivers and they can pick up anything from those. But I like being on the radio. It's like, do you play golf?
I do a little, yeah.
Yeah, I don't, but I shoot bows and arrows and there's a symmetry between them. It's like turning up to play golf or to shoot a round in archery. If you do it on your own all the time, you get a bit bored, don't you?
Mm.
So I kind of like, believe it or not, the feel of going into a studio and doing a programme from a studio, as well as doing my own thing. And you know, bearing in mind, it's just an hour and I do it from my studio at home. And it's...
So what's the main editorial freedom that you have, James? Is it that you can do a show where you don't have to keep interrupting yourself for the news and the weather and the travel? Or is it because you can really say what you think and you don't have to abide by the guidelines of be it Ofcom or the BBC or whoever you're working under?
Well, I think, actually, I don't think it's that free. I think you'd be an idiot if, you know, I've heard some of these podcast radio shows where every other word is a four-letter word for no other reason than they think it's shocking and entertaining. I do it because I can, you know, on traditional radio, whether you've got travel, sport, weather or whatever, you still only have a certain amount of time. And so sometimes on the podcast, you can explore other things for a little longer. And, you know, it explores the sort of, I don't know, I think there are over 130 hours of me just talking inane nonsense in many cases. But those are sort of conversations. And when I first heard talk radio in America, I was surprised how entertaining sometimes just incidental talk about nothing in particular can be. But we haven't yet got used to it in this country.
How important is it that you've got somebody with you to be a foil? You've got this guy, Rob, who appears with you. That's not exactly a zoo, is it? One person called Rob.
But
no. You know what I mean? Because you haven't got phone calls and all the rest of the junk that you would get with broadcast radio, I guess you need something.
Well, I think you do. I think you need a foil. I think you need, and to be honest with you, for 14, 15 years, I think I was on talk radio and then talk sport. And my sidekick was the then engineer stroke producer who drove the program. And that all started because, you know, to be the producer or to be the tech op or whatever you want to call it gets quite boring, doesn't it?
Indeed.
And quite often I used to find that certain people's minds used to wander. And so if I said, listen, I may want to talk to you during the program, I might want to bring you into it. And people... Do you know, it was dear old Adrian Love. Do you remember Adrian?
Very well.
Because before I got into radio, believe it or not, he was on LBC. That was, back in the 70s, one of the first radio stations to go on. And it was one day, something clicked in my mind and made me want to do it. And it was listening to Adrian while I was closing up the pub with my dad, where he did this. I'll demonstrate to you. He was talking to somebody. He said, hang on just a minute. I just want to go and see what's out. I heard a noise. I'll just have a look out. Oh, yeah, something's happening. And then came back to the microphone. And I thought, golly, that's quite interesting. Because it suddenly gave you a different dimension on the studio. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I think people like to have a certain amount of revelation, a kind of glimpse behind the curtain with the broadcaster, don't they?
I think they do. And I think that broadcasting has become very regimented. Now, I know on the BBC, there must be impartiality. There are certain rules and regulations on broadcast media that there aren't on the written media as well. And so I think when you're broadcasting online, you do have a little more freedom. But I think people have to bear in mind, whether they're on Twitter or Facebook or anything else, that they are actually broadcasting and there are certain rules that have to apply.
So when you're doing Breakfast on BBC Essex, James, are you constantly banging your head against the rules? I mean, we know how tightly BBC local radio, in some places at least, is formatted. Is it frustrating you, or do they give you a fairly free rein?
Within, I think the thing we're doing on BBC Essex at the moment, and under the new editor Lou Burt, who worked with me at LBC for a while, I think we are pushing the boundaries a little bit. We've thrown out a lot of the traditional BBC local radio recorded interviews, and now we're encouraging phone calls at breakfast time. And you know, lots of people, particularly in the BBC, oh, you won't get any phone calls on a breakfast show. People don't ring in. Well, we're proving to be quite different, and we are getting calls. Within the bounds of what public service broadcasting has to be, I think we are trying to make it more interesting, because if it doesn't change, and it can't change too much, you know, you have to appeal to everybody because everybody pays the license fee. But I think it has to metamorphosize, doesn't it? It has to develop slightly, or it'll die.
And have they given you a female co-presenter? Because that was the advertised plan, wasn't it? That all breakfast shows would be done by Nina and Frederick.
Yeah. No, I don't. But like everything else, I involve my newsreader, Sonia, who is obviously a female, my sports reporter, Ben, who've become quite important parts of the programme.
OK, so what I was thinking about when I was thinking about talking to you was, I've got a list in front of me, and it says on it Steve Penk, John Gaunt, Danny Baker. Why is British radio so incapable of finding slots on broadcast transmitters for some of these, you know, great heritage broadcasters, do you think?
Well, I think the BBC has to answer that. And, of course, Trevor, you worked for the BBC for many years, didn't you?
So it's all my fault then.
Well, I don't know, Trevor. You could have taken some. I remember having a discussion with you myself about going to work somewhere, which never came to anything.
Never happened. It was a very nice kebab, though, if I remember rightly.
Yes, and I paid for it, if I remember correctly.
Quite right.
Because you said, oh, I work for the BBC. I was interested to take a job with the BBC because somebody said to me, somebody quite prominent in the world of broadcasting, not on the air, said, you'll never get a job with the BBC. So I just wanted to do it to say, ha, ha, ha. And I think things are beginning to change. I think things are beginning to move. Why have some of the people you've met, well, some of the people you mentioned don't deserve to be on the air? That's my own personal feeling about it, because they don't know where the line is. Now, I might have been accused of crossing the line a few times, and I suppose we all do if you're going to do the sort of broadcasting I'm doing. But I think some people think that, you know, being nasty for the sake of just being nasty is entertaining. And I think it was Howard Stern, who I'm a big fan of, said, if I'd just been rude, imagine me talking in an American accent, if I'd just been rude and nasty my career, I wouldn't still be broadcasting. So I think there has to be a certain amount of charm, and I think you have to like the people, not appeal to just one small section of society. Do you know what I mean?
I do understand, and I do think that a certain amount of compassion and civilization is required of a broadcaster. Personally, I've never enjoyed those guys who just rant and rave and turn everybody into the enemy. But I do wonder about whether broadcasters are running scared of some of the great talents. You know, now in this Twitter age where everybody seems to enjoy taking offence, whether they were really offended or not, I think it's quite easy, isn't it, for management to say, look, we better just not take any risks at all.
Well, if they say that, they wouldn't have taken me on for a start. And if managements of radio stations continue to feel like that, then radio will actually disappear up its own backside, because it'll all become bland. And like music radio now, it's all the same. It doesn't matter which station you really listen to, because they all sound the same, don't they? There have been a lot of people who've been very prominent in taking the personality out of radio.
Maybe that's coming back, of course. But just on the subject of talk radio, we've seen not just the station of that name, but a little bit of a proliferation of new talk-based services recently. Have you heard any of them?
Some quite good, some just appalling, because everybody thinks they can do it. Everybody thinks the talk radio station is just you go on and talk. And there has to be something more than that, because there has to be a certain amount of performance involved in it.
And do you think they're not recruiting the right kind of people? Or maybe those people don't exist because there's been nowhere to learn how to do it for so long.
Well, I think that's a very good point that you make. And I'm quite elderly now and I'm still working. I'm sure if they could find younger people than me, they'd take them on. And I think it is a problem. I think it is a problem, because I've heard people on the radio who are doing talk programmes who obviously think they know it's all about being a bit clever, a bit sarcastic, or being a bit confrontational. Well, it is all of those things, but it's not just that. There has to be something else. The same way that if a music presenter sounds deadly dull and boring, doesn't matter what music they play, you probably tend not to listen to them.
I wanted to ask you some advice that would be useful for people starting out in talk radio formats. I do quite a lot of work with students and with community stations, and people do say, what should I talk about? How do I work out what my subject should be for this week? You know, if I'm not getting calls and I'm just sort of throwing the stuff out there. I wonder for you, James, do you sort of keep a little book where you note down ideas, or is it just a question of I turn the microphone on and then I say the first thing that comes into my mind?
One of the things about working for the BBC that has been good for me, because yes, that's exactly how I used to work and how to a certain extent I still do work. You know, like doing the breakfast show is one sort of radio. Doing my podcast is another sort. Doing the show I do on a Saturday morning for BBC Radio Kent is a completely different thing as well. And there are all sorts of different ways of doing it, but they're all linked, because normally I just speak most of the time and I don't really play any music. So the thing to do is, as far as I'm concerned, I should really be charging you for this, shouldn't I? You should be.
There's no doubt about it at all.
The thing to
You'll be lucky.
Yeah, I know. You're a very tight man, Trevor, to be honest with you. And you see that the conversations with people have to go. You have to enjoy a conversation with somebody. And if you don't, then you have to find a way of terminating it and moving on to the next one. And also, one of the things people tend not to do, they worry about other stuff while they're talking to somebody, and they don't listen to the person who they're talking to. So quite often I find people will write me an introduction or a bit for an interview and a long load of questions, and I often think that's quite entertaining because they haven't heard this person, so they don't really know how the interview's going to go. So the questions seldom get used.
And what about when you've just got that blank airtime to fill? Where are you drawing those ideas from?
That's when the skill comes in, isn't it? If there is any skill, it's being able to talk into a microphone, talk to you as if I'm, you know, and so everybody says, oh, you must talk just to one person. You see, I just assume everybody's listening. I just assume you and I are talking to each other, but we have a huge auditorium of listeners around us, like the theatre. So I imagine that. And when we stop talking, somebody else will come in. And if I'm waiting for somebody, then I'll start talking about something else. Might be, do you know, the sun on the back of my neck's feeling really warm this morning. I might have to just move my position in the studio a little bit. Now, I've got now we've got texts and tweets and all that sort of stuff. So you're never short of something to talk about. But I would say, when you're going to take a subject to talk about, you have to think of how you're going to get people to phone you. And some days, whatever you do, whatever tricks you use, people won't phone. And sometimes people get very stressed about it and very upset. I wouldn't, because stations, I've worked only for a week, it has to be said, on a radio station, a talk station in Chicago, because a friend of mine knew the owner. He said, why don't you come over for a holiday and spend a week on it? And even in a big city like this, in a well-known talk station, the guys are talking and waiting for calls to come through. And, you know, they might suddenly flood in on one subject, but quite often you're talking to somebody and waiting for the next call to come along. That's quite a normal way to do talk radio. People are listening, by the way. The amount of people who phone you is not representative of the people you have listening. You could have six really good friends who call you all the time and you think you're really popular.
Wise words, James. It's nice to hear you flourishing. There will be a lot of people listening to this thinking, oh, I'm glad to know that James is still around and doing his stuff. Where do we find the podcast then?
Well, if you just go on to my Twitter site at The James Whale, there's a little link there, jameswhaleradio.co.uk. And, you know, if you get bored, I've got interviews on there with Boy George, Nigel Farage, many other people I can't even remember now. And sometimes no guests at all, just talk to myself. Well, I never talk to myself. I'm always talking to the people listening, if you see what I mean.
And all done from a cupboard under your stairs.
Well, it's a nice cupboard under the stairs.
It sounded a bit J.K. Rowling, the way you were describing it.
Yes, well, I like to think of it like that, to be honest. And if I could write a book like her, then I'd still be talking to you, because even if I didn't have to do it because of money, and I've always had to work. It's funny that, Trevor, isn't it? I'm always paying for people like you.
We're all very grateful, James.
Now, let me just turn it round before you finish. I can always tell when somebody's coming up to the end of an interview, you okay. See. And just as a man who's been involved in radio for as long, if not longer, than me, what are your thoughts of the future? And why is it this great nation of ours, which always wants to talk? We go down to Speaker's Corner on a Sunday afternoon and people are standing on milk crates talking. Why do we only have two, maybe three talk radio stations in the country?
Well, I think there are historical reasons for that, and it's largely to do with the BBC's requirement to be impartial, which it often interprets as boring and bland, and I think that doesn't make for great radio. Also, we've got Radio 4, and the richness of Radio 4 is a very difficult service to compete with. Where do we go in the future? Well, we're doing it, I think. You're doing it. The world of online and on-demand radio is where it's going, and I think future generations will slightly laugh at us for only consuming what we call radio out of a little box on the mantelpiece. I think they'll think of radio as something that they carry around with them in that little box that they have in their pocket called their smartphone. And I think it's going to take a while, but it used to be 1%, then it was 5%, now it's sort of 7 and 8% of people, particularly in America, listening to podcasts. It's the way forward. It'll inch there slowly. I'd much rather be backing a podcast aggregator than a DAB service at the minute. What about you?
Well, I'm hoping that that these new stations going online, everybody's been talking about the new talk radio, and I hope it's not only on DAB, but it's online as well. And I hope that people, if they want those sort of radio stations, that they will check them out and have a listen. The other thing I hope is that younger people think of speech broadcasting as an interesting and entertaining career, because radio generally now is not thought of in the same way that it used to be. Now people want to become celebrity gardeners, celebrity chefs, and celebrity anything else, and they don't think about possibly becoming a broadcaster.
I do find, however, in the universities where I go, that there are people who want to work on the radio, and their frustration is that they don't think there are the stations where they could do what they want to do, which is not necessarily simply shuffling the same 10 records round and round, or having to say, well, on the one hand and on the other hand, and now here's a piece, you know, about Peterborough or, you know, wherever it is that they're meant to be talking about that they don't genuinely think is very interesting. I mean, I take the Danny Baker view about a lot of talk radio, which is there has to be more space for talking about trivia. It doesn't have to all be the news with a capital N, does it?
That's what I've done, and we do three stories in a three-hour show on The Breakfast Show on BBC Essex, which is unheard of on the BBC. And my late, well, not late, he's still around, but the TV show I did in the 90s, which I'm sure you remember.
I do, very well.
Where Mike Mansfield, who was my producer and director on one moment, at one time would come out and with a pencil in one hand say, no, 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 I want to cut that, I want to cut that, I want to cut that. I want James to have time just to be James.
Yes.
And you see, that's what's important, isn't it, for any broadcaster?
I think that there's a lot of production in modern radio which is about constraining personality, whereas actually as listeners we want the personality, you know, just, you know, speaking as a listener, my favorite things on talk radio are Ian Lee, because I'm now hearing the Ian that he wasn't allowed to be on 3CR, and John Holmes, because I'm now hearing him as he is, unfettered by having to play some records. I think the more freedom that you give broadcasters, actually the better they are and the more engaging and compelling they are for us as listeners.
Yeah, Dave, I think you're... Dave? What am I talking
Dave?
About Dave for?
Hello?
I don't know. Where's Dave? Who's Dave? yes, Trevor, absolutely. I think you're correct in every way. I think that it takes a certain sort of somebody to be a speech broadcaster. And I think there is a necessity for us to look out for these people. When I talk about speech, I don't mean Radio 4. That's a completely different entity that will never be copied. Speech broadcasters can talk about nothing in particular and then talk about something that is serious that people want to talk about. And that's the way it has to be, that, you know, it has to be informative. You have to be talking about the news a lot of the time, but then you could be talking about what you did down the pub yesterday evening.
James, I've got to go for the oddest reason, and I will tell you why, seeing as you obliquely mentioned him earlier. I'm about to be interviewed about the freedom of the press by John Gaunt.
Give him my love.
Indeed I will. James, well, thank you so much for talking to the Radio Today programme. It's always a pleasure. We're glad to know that you're flourishing, as I said before, and the very best of luck with your podcast.
Yeah, join me, jameswellradio.co.uk. I'll tell you what I might do. I might even play this out on my podcast.
Broadcast Bionics, innovative solutions for creative radio people.
Our thanks to Rob at BBC Essex for his help with that recording. Let's have some news now from Stuart Clarkson.
Thank you, Trevor. Global Radio is no longer a patron of the Radio Academy. It means staff at the group don't qualify for free membership anymore. The charity's announced new membership options, which start at £3 a month. People working for Radio Academy patrons can upgrade their free membership and get a selection of perks as part of the deal. Bauer Media has announced its intention to bid for the Glasgow FM licence that will be offered by Ofcom. The group's currently running a 30-day trial on DAB in the city with Clyde Rocks. Ofcom will soon be inviting applicants to apply for a licence for either Paisley or the wider Glasgow area. It's after Global handed back the 96.3 frequency last year when it was told it wasn't allowed to put a Radio X feed from London onto the frequency. The number of new cars registered that have DAB as standard is up 26% compared with a year ago. Nearly 600,000 were sold with digital radio in them in the first quarter of 2016. The nostalgia station Angel Radio is being added to 18 DAB multiplexes for a fortnight from the 1st of May. It's part of a celebration of the life and work of Bing Crosby. Special programmes will include his vintage radio shows from the 1940s. Angel Radio is going to be on multiplexes in the south of England, parts of the Midlands, South East Wales and Ayrshire as well. The building where BBC Radio Derby is based has been renamed this week as Bloomfield House. It's in memory of the former breakfast presenter Colin Bloomfield, who died from cancer aged 33 last year. And the former One Extra, The Hits and Kiss presenter Will Manning is swapping sides and joining Capital from Bauer. Global says he'll initially do cover shows on Capital FM and will be a host on Capital TV, including fronting coverage of the Summertime Ball. And those are this week's big stories from radiotoday.co.uk. I'm Stuart Clarkson.
Visual radio smarter and cheaper. Virtual director from Broadcast Bionics combines your social media, messaging, photos, audio and videos with intelligent camera control and automated graphics. Welcome to the social studio at bionics.co.uk.
We start this week 31 years ago and an early commercial radio farewell from a station which lasted just 2 years.
If you've just tuned into GB Radio, you're wondering what's going on. You're expecting to hear Peter Milburn. Well, I'm afraid slight change to our programming plans. It's Colin Briggs sitting in for Peter, the last time anyone will be sitting in for anyone on GB Radio. We're going off air at 11 o'clock this morning, Santa relate. Financial problems, sadly, are the order of the day, and unfortunately, we can't carry on. All the staff gathered together, a bit emotional. I think we've got to say goodbye.
Do you reckon? Shall I go first? Last one in, last one out, I suppose, or first one out. Matthew Rosser, this is me. Thanks to all the people who've helped me out, and bye-bye.
And from me and Davis, I was the first voice on GB Radio. Very sad, as all the rest of the presenters here at GB Radio are, to be saying goodbye, unfortunately, but something we have to do.
Thanks very much indeed for all the good wishes.
The end of Gwent Broadcasting, which closed this week in 1985. Its transmitters then carried neighbouring CBC from Cardiff and evolved into Red Dragon, now Capital. It's changed a bit over the years, hasn't it? Goodbye, Gwent Broadcasting, GB Radio. And staying with Wales this week in 76, Richard Hughes died. He was the author of the first ever radio play. 1971 now, and a BBC local radio launch.
This is BBC Radio Derby on 96.5 megahertz VHF, broadcasting to Derby, Derbyshire and South East Staffordshire. The Derby Ram, played by the Derby Concert Orchestra, welcomes you to this opening...
BBC Radio Derby, launching officially from a converted car showroom this week, 45 years ago. It had been on air, of course, a couple of months before, from a temporary studio at the Transmitter to cover a local crisis. This week, 11 years ago, a Capital farewell from Neil Fox.
The station doesn't change. It's still Capital, and let's be honest, it is one of the greatest radio stations on the planet. You know it because you listen to it every single day. And for 18 years, I have loved being part of this every day. And now I need to play a song because this is silly.
Neil Fox ending his last show on Capital London this week in 2005. Another last show this week in 78.
That one's for me, to Etta Little and Nelson Pigford. And You Take My Heart Away. Double time, 9 minutes before nine. The golden hour this morning with Simon will be way back to 1958. But I have one final duty to perform here, if I can just get the door open. I better just check that the cupboard's nice and empty. Yes. Oh, the old... cupboard does really look very empty indeed. Oh, the things we've had in here over the past 5 years, amazing.
The end of Noel Edmonds on Radio 1 Breakfast 38 years ago, after a spell of nearly 5 years. And who's this starting Radio 1 Breakfast this week in 95?
Now, people have been asking me over the last couple of weeks, have I been practicing for this job for the last 2 weeks? Well, I say no. I've been practicing for this job for the last 20 years. That's what I say. Yes, it's my show. I'm here now. It's BBC Radio 1, and we're on the air. See, and I can do the technical bits as well, you see. That's a great bonus for me. Not only am I very funny, but I can actually do the job.
Chris Evans making his Radio 1 Breakfast debut this week 21 years ago. Now, let's think back to 1969. Here we go, back. And it was a big year for radio soaps. Mrs. Dale's Diary ended.
Yesterday, Gwen and I went over to Parkwood Hill to see the new house. The Lorries were away on their holiday, except for the doctor, but we didn't see him, although his car was outside their house. Sally came with us. She hadn't seen the house.
Mrs.
yet.
Dale's Diary, later just The Dales, was based around the life of doctor's wife Mrs. Mary Dale and her husband Jim. It was first broadcast in January 1948. It ran until this week in 1969, 5,531 episodes. And that series was replaced by this one.
The area has long since been engulfed by the sprawl of London, but something of the village atmosphere remains. Of course, not many of the inhabitants are Londoners by birth. Most have come from all corners of the country to live and work here. Like the girl who's just stepped out of the taxi in this, the first episode called Moving Pictures.
The first Wagoner's Walk, broadcast on Radio 2 this week in 69. So with Heart starting its first networking of three stations 8 years ago.
This is Heart, London's Heart.
The end of the UK theme on Radio 4 10 years ago. The launch of BBC Shropshire 31 years ago.
And it's over to Diane Kemp with The Breakfast Show.
And Edward Heath signing up for a 12-week commercial radio series on sailing 40 years ago.
And eventually it will be of use to listeners to other stations throughout the United Kingdom.
Those are this week's Radio Moments.
David Lloyd's Radio Moments.
Cheers, David. Thanks also this week to Stuart Clarkson, researcher Hayley Hayes, and to you for listening. This has been a TDC production. I'm Trevor Dan. Ta-da!
The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics, creating and distributing clever software for radio.